I welcome you to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word, and invite you to join me in Jeremiah chapter 11, where we dropped off last week, and pick it up with a little bit of a review starting at verse number 6. Remember, these are all words spoken and then eventually written down by the prophet Jeremiah, who is the last big-name prophet of southern Judah. And he's doing all of this in the early years of Jehoiakim, one of the last evil leaders of the kingdom of Judah. And so he has an awful lot to say from God to the people of southern Judah that they don't like, they don't want to hear. But he needs to be encouraged to speak these things anyway. And that's where we pick up in Jeremiah 11, verse 6. He who is said to me, proclaim all these words in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. Hear the words of this covenant and do them. For I solemnly warned your fathers when I brought them up out of the land of Egypt, warning them persistently, even to this day, saying, obey my voice. So God is, through Jeremiah, like as in previous prophets, reminding the people of their history, that generation after generation after generation since they came out of Egypt has declined to keep the covenant as they were supposed to. And so God has, in the past, invoked the negative portions of that covenant. And now he's about to invoke the worst part of the negative consequences of not keeping that covenant, which is sanctuaries are destroyed, cities are destroyed, people are killed, remnant is taken away into exile far from the promised land. So they are given the opportunity in this last generation to make a free will choice to repent, even though God knows that they're not going to, as a large portion, take him up on that offer. The offer still has to be offered for free will to be a reality. So, obey my voice, God says, verse 8, yet they did not obey or incline their ear, but everyone walked in their stubbornness of his evil heart. Therefore, I brought upon them all the words of this covenant, which I commanded them to do, but they did not. He who is said to me, a conspiracy exists among the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, keep in mind what a conspiracy is. It's all about an agreed upon plan of two or more people to basically subvert what is the right thing. And so we've got the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem are involved in conspiracy against God. Verse 10, they have turned back to the iniquities of their forefathers who refused to hear my words. They've gone after other gods to serve them. The house of Israel and the house of Judah have broken my covenant that I made with their fathers. So God reminds them in this period that the northern kingdom's already gone into exile for their choices. And now this kingdom, the southern kingdom, is about to also pay the penalty for their sin. Though they cry to me, I will not listen. The cities of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem will go and they'll cry to the gods to whom they've made offerings, but they cannot save them in the time of their trouble. So they can do all the crying they want to their false gods and goddesses. That's not going to do them any good. Verse 13, for your gods have become as many as your cities, O Judah, and as many as the streets of Jerusalem are the altars you have set up to shame, altars to make offerings to Baal. So idols all over Judah. Every city pretty much has at least one idol. And apparently multiple altars throughout the different areas of the city of Jerusalem. And we already know that there's some that's been put back into the temple complex as well. Didn't matter that Josiah got rid of all that junk. It's all been brought in again under the leadership of his first and second sons who have been serving as king. Verse 14, therefore, do not pray for this people or lift up a cry or prayer on their behalf, for I will not listen when they call to me in the time of their trouble. So this is really sad that it's gotten to the point that God tells a righteous man, Jeremiah, don't even bother to talk to me about them. I'm done with them. I'm not going to listen to them when they beg me for mercy when the judgment starts falling on them. Verse 15, what right has my beloved in his house when she has done many vile deeds? So what right does the beloved nation of Israel, Judah is all that's left of it, have to come into God's house, God's complex of worship, when they've been involved in false worship all over the place? They don't have a right. Can even sacrificial flesh avert your doom? Can you then exult? So can rituals get rid of this? Can animal sacrifices make up for the fact that you're offering sacrifice to other gods and goddesses as well? He who is once called you a green olive tree, beautiful with good fruit. Now, this is where we closed up on Friday. One of the major symbols of the nation of Israel is the olive tree. It's even used in the New Testament. So, at one time, God referred to the people of Israel as a lovely, beautiful olive tree. But, he goes on, with the roar of a great tempest, he will set fire to it, and its branches will be consumed. So this great big firestorm is going to come sweeping through the country of Judah, through the city of Jerusalem, and burn up that olive tree, because it's now out of control with its sin. He who is of the hosts who planted you has decreed disaster against you because of the evil that the house of Israel and the house of Judah have done, provoking me to anger by making offerings to Baal. So it all comes back to the idea that they've abandoned the singular worship of the singular God and started worshiping other gods and goddesses. And God says, that's not going to work. This is a solo relationship. And if you are going to spread your attention out to other gods and goddesses, I'm done with you. And you may not have the house anymore. You may not have the city anymore. You may not have the country anymore. I'm sending you away. We'd had other prophets, remember, describe this as a sort of divorce where God was sending away northern Israel. Verse 18, he who is made it known to me, and I knew. Then you showed me their deeds. But I was like a gentle lamb led to the slaughter. I did not know it was against me. They devised schemes, saying, let us destroy the fruit with it, the tree with its fruit. Let us cut him off from the land of the living, that his name be remembered no more. Now this seems to be Jeremiah jumping into the story, saying, I didn't realize just how much hatred there was directed toward me by these people. Some of them my own relatives, some of them my fellow priests. They hoped to take my life away. They hoped to erase my work. Verse 20, but, oh, he who is of hosts, who judges righteously, who tests the heart and the mind, let me see your vengeance upon them, for to you I have committed my cause. So Jeremiah talks to God and says, God, please deal with them. Deal with these people that are trying to take me out of the picture. Verse 21, therefore, thus says he who is concerning the men of Anathoth. Now, Anathoth is a priestly town immediately north of Jerusalem. We're only talking about a couple of miles. And it is the hometown of Jeremiah. It's where he was born and raised. And so apparently it's some of his own hometown people, including relatives, that are trying to get him killed. So this is what God says concerning the men of Anathoth who seek your life and say, do not prophesy in the name of he who is, or you will die by our hand. Therefore, thus says he who is of the hosts, behold, I will punish them. The young men shall die by the sword, their sons and their daughters shall die by famine, and none of them shall be left, for I will bring disaster upon the men of Anathoth, the year of their punishment. So these people that are planning or thinking very seriously about killing Jeremiah, they're probably not intending to murder him so much as they're going to bring him up on charges and seek his execution. We've already seen they tried that. These people, these men of similar age to his, I'm guessing Jeremiah's somewhere in his early 40s at this time, those guys are going to die during the Babylonian invasion. They're going to die by the sword. And then their families, they're going to die of starvation because of the siege that will take place when Jerusalem fails to follow God's directions through Jeremiah and surrender to the Babylonians. So they will try to hold out. And so many of these widows and the sons and daughters of the dead priests will die by famine. None of them shall be left, for I will bring disaster upon the men of Anathoth the year of their punishment. Chapter number 12. Righteous are you, O he who is, when I complain to you, yet I would plead my case before you. So Jeremiah says, you're the righteous one, but I really want to lay this out here. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? So Jeremiah throws out there the thing that bothers so many of us. Why does it feel too often like bad people get away with it and have nice things happen in their lives, while good people, they have horrible things happen to them? Why? Why? Verse 2, you plant them and they take root, they grow and produce fruit. You are near in their mouth and far from their heart. So this is his complaint, that it almost seems sometimes as if God's being nice to them when they don't even worship him properly. They honor him with their lips, but their hearts are far from him. I believe that comes from Isaiah, who lived quite a few decades previous to Jeremiah's birth. But you, O he who is, know me. You see me. You test my heart toward you. So you know that I am one of the ones that lives the life that I profess. So he makes a request. Pull them out like sheep for the slaughter and set them apart for the day of slaughter. So he has what would be referred to here as an imprecatory psalm. We've seen these with David as well, where you want God to deal harshly with those that have been dealing harshly with you. How long will the land mourn and the grass of every field wither for the evil of those who dwell in it? The beasts and the birds are swept away because they said, he will not see our latter end. So these bad guys think that they'll get away with it again. And so he's asking, Jeremiah is begging God, don't let them get away with it, especially in trying to kill me when I've been just telling them what you said. Verse 5. This is God's response to Jeremiah. If you have raced with men on foot and they've wearied you, how will you compete with horses? So Jeremiah, look, guy, you can't just jump into the middle of this thing and think that you know what needs to happen. You can't win in foot races against your people. How are you going to win against horses? If in a safe land you are so trusting, what will you do in the thicket of the Jordan? Now, what it's meaning here is if you're having a tough time just walking the streets, imagine what it's like to try to go through the brush that's grown up next to the Jordan River. It meaning times are going to get even tougher yet. For even your brothers and the house of your father, even they have dealt treacherously with you. They are in full cry after you. Do not believe them, though they speak friendly words to you. So God tells Jeremiah, look, even your closest family members, the people that share your bloodline intimately, your own brothers, you can't trust them. Verse 7, I have forsaken my house. I have abandoned my heritage. I have given the beloved of my soul into the hands of her enemies. This is God talking about what's happening with Jerusalem and with Judah. God loved Judah. God loved Jerusalem. God loved his temple. And yet he's handing that all over for judgment to the Babylonians. My heritage has become to me like a lion in the forest. She's lifted up her voice against me, therefore I hate her. Is my heritage to me like a hyena's lair? Are the birds of prey against her all around? Go, assemble all the wild beasts, bring them to devour. So again, more judgment talk here. Many shepherds have destroyed my vineyard. They've trampled down my portion. They have made my pleasant portion a desolate wilderness. So shepherds here stands for the human leadership in the southern kingdom of Judah. They've already ruined everything for God. They have made it a desolation. Desolate. It mourns to me. The whole land is made desolate, but no man lays it to heart. So nobody seems to care that things are really screwed up. Upon all the bare heights in the desert, destroyers have come, for the sword of he who is devours from one end of the land to the other. No flesh has peace. They have sown wheat and have reaped thorns. They've tired themselves out, but profit nothing. They shall be ashamed of their harvest because of the fierce anger of he who is. So again, more of the same. Judgment is coming, and it is at God's direction. Thus says he who is concerning all my evil neighbors who touch the heritage that I've given my people Israel to inherit. Behold, I will pluck them up from their land. I will pluck up the house of Judah from among them. And after I've plucked them up, I will again have compassion on them, and I will bring them again, each to his heritage and each to his land. Now, this is good news. There's not much of it, and it's got a lot of future until it comes to pass. But God says, I am going to have a righteous remnant that will get through all of this disaster. And to be quite honest, prophetically, they will get through future disasters that deal with the ethnic people of Israel. But when it's all said and done, God will have some of the ethnic descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that will be back in the land. Now, the ultimate fulfillment of that will be what we call the millennial kingdom period. They will come back before the Messiah shows up. And we know a lot of ethnic Israelis have come back to the land again in modern times out of all the horrors of the Nazi regime. But the ultimate one that I think will always be in God's mind when he makes these prophecies is when Jesus comes back and gathers those who call upon his name to himself. Verse 16, it shall come to pass, if they will diligently learn the ways of my people, to swear by my name, as he who is lives, even as they taught my people to swear by Baal, then they shall build up in the midst of my people. And if any nation will not listen, then I will utterly pluck it up and destroy it, declares he who is. So God makes the promises about the future. even in the midst of threats about the near future. Chapter 13 is interesting because Jeremiah is tasked by God to do something that takes time and effort in order to provide a clear mental picture to the people of what's going on. So chapter 13, again, taking place early in the reign of Jehoiakim, so probably 608, 607, 606, probably not much later than 606, does this. Thus says he who is to me, go buy a linen loincloth and put it around your waist and do not dip it in water. So go buy yourself what was the sort of underwear of Jeremiah's day. And he's to put it on. And he's not to wash it. So he's going to wear his underwear for a long time. That's, I know that's kind of gross, but this is important to the illustration. Verse 2. So I bought a loincloth according to the word of he who is and put it around my waist. And the word of he who is came to me a second time. Take the loincloth that you bought, and which is around your waist, and arise, go to the Euphrates and hide it there in a cleft in the rock. Now that means he has to travel several weeks up to the Euphrates and back again in order to do this. So he's going to take this trip up into the area where the Babylonian Empire is growing. And he's going to go to the Euphrates River. Euphrates River has got lots and lots of potential places where he could have done this. But he's going to take his underwear off. Presumably he's got new. And he's going to hide it in a little rocky place. Verse 5. So I went and I hid it by the Euphrates as he who has commanded me. Then he comes back. And then this happens. Verse 6. After many more days, he who is said to me, arise, go to the Euphrates and take from there the loincloth that I commanded you to hide there. So we don't know how long passed, but he has to go back to that little hiding spot and get his old underwear. Verse 7. Then I went to the Euphrates and I dug and I took the loincloth from the place where I had hidden it. And behold, the loincloth was spoiled. It was good for nothing. Now, of course, it had been worn for a long period of time, not washed, and then stuffed into a rocky spot and left there for who knows how long. It's not going to be a usable pair of underwear. Verse 8. Then the word of he who is came to me, thus says he who is, even so I will spoil the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. This evil people who refuse to hear my words, who stubbornly follow their own heart and have gone after other gods to serve them and to worship them, shall be like this loincloth, which is good for nothing. For as the loincloth clings to the waist of the man, so I made the whole house of Israel and the whole house of Judah cling to me, declares he who is, that they may be for me a people, a name, a praise, and a glory, but they would not listen. So effectively, God says, I have worked with northern Israel, southern Judah, for centuries. I have stuck to them and kept them even when they've grown nasty and dirty over time. I've stuck with them until finally I can't handle it anymore. I'm going to send them away to the area of the Euphrates. Now, the northern kingdom's already gone up there. The southern kingdom is about to go there. And it will ruin the larger portion of this judgment coming against the nation of Israel and the kingdom of Judah specifically. Verse number 12. You shall speak to them this word. Thus says he who is the God of Israel. Every jar shall be filled with wine. All right, so he's supposed to go and say, all right, all these jars need to be filled up with wine. And they will say to you, do we not indeed know that every jar will be filled with wine? Again, presumably, this is all happening during vintage time, when they've collected the grapes and they've squashed them under their feet in all the great big vats. And now Jeremiah shows up and goes, hey, you need to put all of that wine in those jars. And their response is, duh, of course all these jars need to be filled with wine. Verse 13, then you shall say to them, thus says he who is, behold, I will fill with drunkenness all the inhabitants of this land, the king who sits on David's throne, the priests, the prophets, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And I will dash them one against another, fathers and sons together, declares he who is. I will not pity or spare or have compassion that I should not destroy them. One of the things that we see imaged in both Old Testament and in the New Testament is that the vintage stomped out of grapes is often portrayed as God's wrath being prepared. And then that vintage is stored away for just the right time. Now, Jeremiah is also going to, in his continued ministry, talk about nations and people getting drunk under God's judgment, because they'll be reeling to and fro because of the things that's happening. So that's what's being presented here, is that God's vintage of judgment is about to be forced on the leadership and the people of the land. And they will reel around, stumble around, and fall into a dead drunk because of God's judgment over their sins. And so this is the sort of stuff that Jeremiah is trying to get the people to pay attention to and repent.